It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
What makes a success in America? Is it good connections, good looks, or a good attitude about life and its possibilities? Well, none of these things can hurt. But how about hard work and a desire to achieve success? We start life from different vantage points. We don't get to pick our parents, our race, our sex, or nationality. Yet, somehow, we make it. We can all achieve or seemingly impossible goals regardless of where we start. My next guest and I share a lot in common. We were both high school dropouts who earned high school equivalencies or GEDs. We worked while in school and eventually achieved the American dream. Chester Gould is a director of a fast-growing company in the Northeast. He is a husband, a father of two children, a girl and a boy. He is the founder of Gould Innovations and Cafe Sua Da, a Vietnamese iced coffee company, and he's also the author of Top Vietnamese Coffee Recipes. Chester will share his remarkable story with us. Chester, welcome to the Be the People Show.
Thank you.
We share a lot in common. One of the things that we share that I mentioned is that you were a high school dropout as well. What were the circumstances that led you to leave school?
It's a relatively long story, but I'll try to summarize it. My parents got divorced, and I was forced to move to Southern Florida with my mother. While there, I got into a lot of trouble. It was an extremely terrible neighborhood in West Palm Beach. And I hated it there. So I ran away. I moved back where I grew up in upstate New York. And I kind of just lived with my friends for a few months until I got sick. And, the family and police were like, hey, we can't just, let you go based upon, yourself. I think I was only maybe 14 or 15 at the time.
And you were trying to take care of yourself?
Yes. It was safer. And I've always kind of been an entrepreneur. I used to sell bikes and a variety of things. So, I was making money to feed myself, but, at the time they wouldn't just release me from the hospital without like a guardian. So, initially my uncle, signed the papers to get me out of the hospital, but, it was my, ex-stepfather who ultimately adopted me and put me back into school. Unfortunately, he wasn't very wealthy. We're a very blue collar family. He worked in a factory. I think actually he had just recently gotten laid off. So he made it clear that I could stay with him, but I kind of had to work my way. I couldn't just live off of him. So I immediately went to work. At the time, they wouldn't let me work full time, so I actually had to work two part-time jobs because I was under 16. And then, immediately as soon as I did turn 16, I got a job in a factory, and I was working there full-time while going to high school.
You ran away from home at around 14, age 14 or so. You lived with friends for a while. Yeah. So you were pretty much homeless in a way, but staying with friends. Yeah. Then you say you got ill and your ex stepfather adopted you. Yes. And made you work. How do you feel about the fact that he made you work?
I wouldn't say that, he made me work. I mean, we were just really poor, and I was actually happy to be with him because I considered him to be, an excellent role model. He was always kind of, a father to me ever since I was like five. So, I didn't look at it that way at all. Actually, I was very grateful that, he even accepted me and was willing to adopt me. But I was aware of the financial circumstances. We lived in a basement apartment right behind the railroad tracks, you know, like
lovely
possible apartment you could imagine. I mean, I didn't even have a bedroom. I slept on the couch, but he was grateful enough to buy me a couch to sleep on. So, but we just, you know, and I was a growing boy, you know, just a young teenager. I was always hungry. So I wanted to have, money to buy food. And I knew that, you know, he couldn't afford to, you know, feed me and pay all the bills and everything by himself.
But, well, let's fast forward to some of the things you've done now. You have a gift when it comes to technology.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So I was always fascinated by computers ever since I was, you know, probably 8 or 9 years old. We could never afford one. So I suppose that planted a seed or, you know, some motivation in my head initially. And then when I was about 16 or 17 years old, I moved in with my Uncle Rich, and one of his best friends worked at the state. And the state was throwing away, you know, their older computers. And he managed to grab about 100 of them and drop them off at our house. And it was like, wow, all of a sudden I have 100 computers here. And they were all really old. For any tech people listening, they were 386s. But I just got to play with them. You know, I was working at the time, but my free time, I would be at my uncle's house, and I just have all these computers to play with. So we had a cable connection, which was a relatively fast internet connection. I remember downloading music from Napster, and then I suppose the time that I went from a regular user to someone that would be considered a technology professional was the first time I downloaded a virus, and it erased everything on my computer. And
now, when was this? How old were you when you started developing your gift in computer technology?
Probably 17, maybe
17. That's very interesting for someone that has the background you've described.
Oh, thank you. Well, I just spent 6 months, you know, acquiring, you know, probably a few thousand hours worth of music. And then I lost it all in, you know, 1 minute by clicking the virus. So I had a strong incentive to never let that happen again. So I started reverse engineering the virus. I found out that if I opened it up in Notepad, I could read the programming code. And then I just started playing around. I spent probably about 3 or 4 weeks playing with it until I kind of taught myself the programming language that it was written in, and I was able to kind of detect, future viruses or other things that were on the market. That sparked my interest, and then I just started going to the library and getting books. I actually joined a technical college. I spent about maybe 1 year there, but even that was too slow. I was just absorbing the books. You know, I would just go to the library and just take out every book and just go home and, you know, read all of them, Java, Windows Server, Unix, Linux, everything that I could get my hands on.
And you went to college. And before we talk about how you reached college, I'd like to take a break. Each week, the Be the People show presents interviews with insightful guests from the world of politics, religion, media, and culture. The Be the People show is on podcast. It offers bonus footage. To listen to Be the People online, go to the BeThePeopleNews.com website and subscribe to the Be the People podcast, heard also on the America Out Loud Network.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm back with my guest, Chester Gould. And we're talking about his remarkable life as someone that was pretty much homeless as a young teen, a runaway, and he is now a successful businessman. And Chester, how did you end up in college?
So I originally went to the technical school, like I said, but I dropped out because I was paying for it in cash. And I didn't feel like, at least at that school, that I was getting my money's worth. So I dropped out for many years. It wasn't until I met my kid's mother, who's Japanese, and her father is a professor at university. And I moved to Japan, lived over there for a couple of years. My first year there, I taught English. And then my second year there, I actually got a job, my first job in technology. I got a very, very entry level, help desk type position at the United Nations. And I had a really strong mentor there, another professor. And they both just really, really encouraged me to go get my degree, at which point I found an accredited online university. At the time, it was one of the only ones in the world. And I started going to college there to pursue that.
And you have traveled extensively across the world.
Yeah, I haven't been to Australia or South America yet, but
you've been to some pretty interesting places. So would you share a little bit about the travels and just how we get to your launch of Cafe Suda?
Sure. So so while I was in Japan working at the UN, I redesigned the IT infrastructure for Japan and then some of the other countries in Asia. And then they sent me to Africa. And then while I was there, I was invited to work with OSS Asia, which is like an open source software foundation that, its intention is to help, developing countries be more successful through the power of innovative technology. So we did an extremely large project in Vietnam. It was very interesting. I think the government took maybe the top 500 high school students and like in math and science, and they put them all in a room and they split them up into groups. I think it was a 5 or 6. And they went through a series of labs that I helped modify, and other members of the organization created for them to kind of go through. And any of the groups that were successful in completing the labs were recipients of scholarships to larger universities in the United States. So that was my first exposure to Vietnam. I made some friends there. And then when I came back to the United States, I worked with a lot of companies over in Vietnam. And I always just kind of, I don't know, for some reason, and, just kind of made a place in my heart where I always felt like closer. I just always loved the people and the culture.
The tech students that you trained that came to the U.S., did they come as students or did they come as HB1 workers, as technical workers?
Yeah, students, definitely. And then many of them actually went on to work in South Korea. So they actually used some of the tools that we taught them and, advanced that more in university and then went on to jobs like at LG, and they program, a lot of the software for Samsung and our TVs now. So I'm really, really proud of that program and what we were able to do there.
Okay. And so after completing your work in Vietnam, you returned to the U.S., and what have you been doing since then?
So when I first came back to the U.S., I started Google Innovations, I ran a technology company, and then I was a professional software developer for another larger company in Saratoga Springs, New York. And then I worked on some government projects, and then went back to running my own business. I kind of like went back and forth depending upon how exciting the projects were that for the positions that I was offered.
Sounds like you have ADHD.
I've heard that many times.
Well, welcome to the club.
Yeah. I was in upstate New York and I worked on a very large project with another company. company that I work for now, and they did, you know, the networking side, and I did the infrastructure side. And then, you know, I saw they had a position available, and, you know, we worked out really well together while we were there on that project. So I decided to take a position with them. I'm really excited.
All right. That sounds, you've established your technical skills. And so what I would like for you to do now is sort of just reflect on your journey.
Okay.
Because part of what I want to focus on this show is encouraging people about success and just how we should follow our dreams. And right now you're about ready to follow a new dream, or you're in the process of following a new dream.
Yeah.
But what would you tell our listeners about your success story?
Yeah, it's difficult to think about, you know, being successful. I mean, in my case, I guess I would attribute most of my success due to, you know, the pain that I experienced through some of my difficulties when I was younger, you know, not having any food to eat, you know, and remembering that, you know, will drive someone. And I still have that kind of, you know, pain or memory in my head. So that, you know, that kind of drives me to make sure that at least, you know, I don't go hungry. And then I suppose it also makes me, you know, humble. I don't have to get so greedy. I'm happy as long as I have food to eat and a roof over my head. I don't need to go out and make $1 million or, you know, or go really crazy. I'm, you know, I'm grateful just to have a lot of the simple things.
So, and as far as spirituality, does that play a role in your life? And if so, how?
Yeah, definitely. There was one instance, I was in a terrible, terrible spot. My daughter had just gotten born, and this was before I moved to Japan. I was actually running an advertising company, and it was so difficult. I wasn't sleeping. I was getting up. I was living in New Jersey, and I was getting up at like 4:30, 5 a.m. every day, and I wouldn't get home until like after midnight. And one night while I was coming back home from work, I fell asleep at the wheel, and I smashed full speed right into a median with my car. And I definitely should have died in that. And the engine like split, you know, like cracked, and I walked away without a scratch. And I don't know if it was just because I was dazed because I hit my head or what, but I remember some kind of entity you know, on the side of the street while the police were, you know, I could hear sirens, but I remember some kind of entity there saying like, hey, you know, you'll be all right. Like, don't worry, you know. And then I don't remember seeing that entity again. It just kind of like disappeared.
Right. It sounds very comforting.
Yeah. I don't know. After that, I was just like, wow. And then I remember going back and seeing the car afterwards, and I'm like, oh my God, how did I even survive through that? It's amazing. So I've always just kind of felt like maybe something is, you know, or something or someone is looking out for me or taking care of me. I used to go to church all the time when I was a kid. Even, you know, when I was really young, my mother had a lot of drug and alcohol problems. And I remember getting up at like, you know, I was only like 6 years old, and I would get up and I'd wake her up and ask her for a dollar to go to church. And I'd walk to church by myself, and I'd be sitting there all by myself. And I don't know. I think I've always just had, I've always been very spiritual and had a, you know, a close relationship with God, or at least I'd like to feel like I do. I don't know. I feel it inside me.
Well, you know, it's interesting about you taking refuge in a church, because I have spoken with other people who have told me in bad situations that they would, as children, they made their way to the church, and that was a place of safety and comfort for them. Were you noticed while you were in the church? Were there any adults that took an interest in you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say much of the community, but definitely the pastor or the priest there was actually Roman Catholic Church. I was born out of wedlock, actually, and half of my family, you know, used to go to all this one church, but they wouldn't accept me there because I was born out of wedlock. And then I don't know if it split the family or what, but my mom was really upset. So then we went to another church, and that priest baptized me, even though I was, you know, I was probably 4 or 5 years old at the time. He always noticed me and smiled at me and waved. He was a really great guy.
Well, one of the things, you know, that I'd like to say based on listening to your story and being a person of faith is that, you know, God has always been a part of your life. It seems like he spared your life. And I hope that you will get to know him personally. And I'm speaking as a Protestant. I know that Catholics have a different, some Catholics, I don't want to stereotype people, but some Catholics have a different conception of God than Protestants do. Oh, but we believe, you know, that Jesus Christ is a person that loves us and wants a personal relationship with us, and that God orders our footsteps and he controls our destiny.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I've studied actually while I was at the UN. Surprisingly, there were a lot of Christians there, and while I was there, they encouraged me to read more. So I actually did read the Bible quite a few times. I used to read it all the time on the train while I was in Japan, and I think they're kind of shaped. So I wouldn't classify myself, if I were to classify myself into any kind of segregation, I would definitely say that I was also a Protestant. Despite being, raised Roman Catholic.
Now, Chester, we are going to take another break. And after we return from the break, I want you to tell us about Vietnamese coffee and why you love it so much.
Okay.
You're listening to Be the People. Dr. Carol Swain is the mind behind Be the People News, radio, podcast, and YouTube. Be the People's mission is dedicated to empowering individuals to think independently, understand their responsibility, and believe in their unique ability to make a difference in the world. Check out Carol's work at BeThePeopleNews.com. To invite Carol to be your next keynote speaker, go to BeThePeopleNews.com. That's BeThePeopleNews.com.
Welcome back to the Be the People show. So Chester, you've started a Vietnamese coffee company, Cafe Sua Da.
Cafe Sua Da, that's how you say and pronounce Vietnamese iced coffee in Vietnamese. So I don't know if it's the easiest name, and maybe I'll change it at some point in the future, but I'm going to stick with it for now.
Well, I mean, if you're branding it, then I guess you would stick with that brand and say it enough times that we can all either say it or spell it.
Yeah. Most people remember it after they've had a couple.
Yes. And I did sample it. I'm not much of a coffee drinker, but I really enjoyed trying the coffee and just the fact that it's almost like a dessert drink.
Yeah, it can be. Depends on how much milk you put in. In Vietnam, they have, after work every day, instead of, people going to the bar and drinking alcohol, it's they go to the coffee shops and sit down and drink coffee. It's really like a special experience.
So what was it about Vietnamese coffee that would cause you, a tech guy, to launch a coffee company?
Well, one of the reasons why I decided to launch Cafe Sua Da was my inability to find consistently fresh Vietnamese coffee in the United States. So I traveled to Vietnam maybe 6 or 7 times over the past couple of years. And every time I go there, you know, the coffee is just amazing. They make it with these special Robusta beans that they grow up in the highlands, and you know, it's really strong, and you sip it, and it's such a powerful, memorable experience. And I wanted to be able to recreate that, especially with my wife, you know, because I really love, I cherish the memories I have with her, you know, over there drinking the coffee with her family and friends. And it's just it's an amazing experience. And then, you know, I wanted to recreate that back here in the U.S. But, after I went to, 8 or 12 different grocery stores where they don't sell it, and then even going to some specialty stores where they did sell it, you know, I found that, the coffee grounds were, you know, mixed with other materials, or they were really, really stale and old. So I actually called some of the existing, distributors in the U.S. And I asked them, I was like, hey, how can I get fresh coffee? And a lot of them said that sometimes it's challenging because they, you know, they import them over, but then if they don't sell them quick enough, you know, they just sit there on the shelves for a long time. So, you know, one of my primary objectives is to, you know, increase that supply chain so that at least this way we can get a consistent shipment. I think if we can get a consistent, even just one shipment every single month, you know, there's no reason why, you know, people wouldn't have to have, you know, people would have stale coffee. They could always have fresh coffee available.
And at the present time, your company is online. You ship the coffee to people that contact you, or is it in some stores?
Yeah, no, it's not in any stores yet, but I am considering that. I've actually, especially with the release of the recipe book, many people have approached me and said, hey, will you please open a, you know, a physical coffee shop that I can go to? And, you know, so we've considered doing that. We've also considered, you know, opening up carts. But currently it's just online as a kit. It's kind of, you know, I found that even the people that have had Vietnamese coffee in the US, well, most of them that have had Vietnamese coffee, like real Vietnamese coffee, are absolutely in love with it. But the ones that I've met in the US, they don't always have the right tools to brew it. So traditionally, they're brewed in what's called a fin filter.
Yes.
It's like a slow drip process. So, you know, you put a couple tablespoons or a few tablespoons of coffee in there and you let it drip for about 5 minutes really slowly. And it makes a really strong, and that's where you get like the real, you know, cafe sudado experience. So I put together a kit that includes everything that you need to be able to recreate that experience. So you have like fresh coffee grounds, two fin filters. So, you know, you can make one for yourself and a spouse or a friend. And then they also drink the coffee primarily. They don't use milk and sugar. They use sweetened condensed milk, but it's different than the sweetened condensed milk in the U.S. The sweetened condensed milk in the U.S. is primarily made for baking. So this one's a little bit milkier. It's not as sweet, but, you know, usually people put a teaspoon or two teaspoons of the sweetened condensed milk and then, you know, a few ice cubes or a little bit of extra water. And, yeah, when you take that first sip, it's, you know, if you've had it before, it's like, wow, I remember.
I've had it because you've shared a kit with me, and it is quite an experience. I really enjoyed sampling it for the first time.
Yeah, I love the look and expression on people's faces that have never had it before, that tasted for the first time. I think my my cousin Stacy screamed out, and she said some, you know, explicit. I can't repeat what she said, but, you know, she was like, she was very surprised and kind of shocked when she was like, I can't believe I've never had this before. So, you know, I love introducing it to people that haven't had it before. So
now when people order your coffee online, they get the utensils, the coffee, and the condensed milk.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm even putting in some coffee spoons in there too to make it so it's like a nice little kit.
And if they were to use the condensed milk that they buy in the grocery store, would that work?
Yeah, you can use it. It's a little different flavor. You know, the condensed milk you buy at the store is made for baking. So this one's really made for actually they make this sweetened condensed milk primarily for use with coffee. So, and all the products are from, you know, the coffee and the condensed milk are from Vietnam.
And Chester, can you tell our audience how they can order the kit or communicate with you about the cookbook?
Sure. So, yeah, if you just go to the website, it's http cafesuada.co, and that's cafesuada.co. And you can go there and get the free recipe book. And then on the next page, there's an offer there where you can get the Vietnamese coffee kit.
We will be posting a link to your website. So anyone that's listening who would like to order the kit and try out the Vietnamese coffee for yourself, you can do that from the website, from the America Out Loud website link, or from Be the People News. So Chester, thank you so much for being on the Be the People show and sharing part of your life and about this coffee venture that you have embarked on.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And for the listeners, Chester represents the American dream, a person that had a rough time in life, and many of us have had rough times in life, but through his fortitude, and I will say the providential hand of God, doors were opened up for him, and he was able to explore and develop a gift to be able to understand computers and that whole world of technology. But then as human beings, we are more than one dimensional. Chester has now embarked on something that doesn't quite fit with technology. He has launched a Vietnamese coffee company. And so I would encourage you, for those of you that would like to order the coffee and explore that, then there is a link in the show description that you can click on the link, or you can go to the website and you can order the coffee and let Chester know, you know, what you think of the Vietnamese coffee experience. Share your own experience. And until next time, remember that we the people must be the people. And being the people means being out there, sharing your dream, not allowing the hand that you were dealt with at birth to prevent you from accomplishing great and mighty things. And until next time, thank you.